Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an update on deliberations today before the United Nations Security Council, where a majority of the council, led by Secretary of State Clinton, have drafted a resolution calling for the Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad to step down from power. Veteran UN reporter Ian Williams joins us. He is a senior analyst at Foreign Policy in Focus, and we will discuss if, how, and when the UN will overcome a veto threat from Russia and China and take action to stop the killing in Syria. Then, as civil war in Syria intensifies, a Syrian-American sociologist who is a professor emerita of sociology at Simmons College in Boston, Elaine Hagopian, joins us to provide an analysis of the forces arrayed inside and outside of Syria. We will discuss how the Saudis and Qataris are arming and training the Syrian opposition in an effort to shape the outcome of the Arab Spring that protects their regional interests and feudal regimes. Then finally, the country's leading non-Mormon expert on the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints joins us to discuss Mitt Romney's religion and the effect that it and the Mormon Church's hierarchy might have on a Romney presidency. Jan Shipps, a professor emerita of history and religious studies at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, joins us. Her books include Mormonism, The Story of a New Religious Tradition, and Sojourner in the Promised Land, 40 Years Amongst the Mormons. Joining us now is Ian Williams, who is a veteran journalist and author, as well as a senior analyst on Foreign Policy and Focused. He writes for Salon and Alternet and is the author of a number of books, including The UN for Beginners, The Arms Trade, that's ALMS, Deserter, George W. Bush's War on Military Families, Veterans and His Past, and Rum, A Social and Sociable History. His blog is Deadline Pundit. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ian Williams.
Hello, Ian. Hi.
And when I say you're a veteran UN correspondent, do you want to tell me how long you've been covering the UN?
Oh, I'd rather not. 1989, when I first came to New York. So I'm now on my fourth Secretary General.
I see. Well, tell me about what happened today, because I understand starting yesterday, Hillary Clinton was there and the majority of the UN Security Council have drafted a resolution asking the Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad to step aside, and the Russians have threatened to veto this. And I believe today they've spent the entire day trying to persuade the Russians to get on board. What's the latest?
Well, the last count that I saw was that there were 9 positive votes for the resolution. The resolution, by the way, is under Chapter 6 of the UN Charter, which means it is not enforceable by military means. For that, you need a Chapter 7 resolution. And obviously, the powers that drafted it, the Arab League in the West, did so with an eye to Russia to make sure that things, to allay Russian suspicions. But the whole situation is extremely complicated, and there's some justice on all sides. I mean, yes, Assad is a dictator, and yes, he's killing his own people. And he probably does not have the support of the majority of Syrians, but he does have the support of a significant minority, especially his significant minority, the Alawites. But then, you know, there's the other complications, is that Syria is a frontline state with Israel, so there's some reluctance for anyone to authorize a military assault, which would that the Israelis might take advantage of. And then there's the whole issue. For Russia, and India and a few other countries, the question is they always put themselves in the shoes of the target. And the question is, if they do that to them, will they do it to us? So, you know, throughout the last part of the 20th century, Russia was behaving in Chechnya with every bit as much brutality as as lots of it in Bosnia, but nobody said a word. It was an internal matter. Despite all the stuff about responsibility to protect, we saw that the King of Bahrain got away scot-free. And you have to get that conjunction of planets in the sky. Like, Gaddafi was incredibly unpopular and nobody cared. And the Russians were totally disingenuous because, of course, Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, had actually been the UN ambassador throughout the Iraq war. And he knew what was going to happen when if Russia didn't veto that. But they were concerned to get rid of Gaddafi, and also, presumably, they knew he was, his number was up, and they wanted to carry on selling weaponry and buying oil and doing all the other things with the income of. So they did not strenuously oppose the resolution. In the case of Syria, it is more complicated for all of those reasons. The Russians want to carry on selling weaponry. They're also showing signs. Lavrov, who I mentioned, is in Australia this week. According to some reports, he's dodging calls from Hillary Clinton. Sergei Lavrov is a fluent English speaker, by the way. Suave, sophisticated, cosmopolitan, knows the world, and also is very conscious of the humiliations that the Americans have heaped on Russia over the last 20 years.
But surely, Ian, he works for Vladimir Putin, who's the boss now. This is not the Medvedev period anymore. And Putin is clearly soured on the West, he's up, and the West have soured on him. You know, he's a sort of KGB gangster running KGB Incorporated, and I don't think there's any illusions on any side. So I think pretty clearly, the arms deal is a big part of this. Because it represents, I think, some $4 billion, the most recent arms deal involving jet fighters. And Russian investors have put, invested in Russian businessmen have invested about $20 billion in Syria. So when Russia and China say that they don't want this resolution to go forth, to ask Assad to sit down, they want to foster dialogue within the country. But God's sake, it's too late for that because of Bashar Assad.
Of course it is, yes. But I mean, we have to remember that this is a complex process and they're playing to a gallery. So by playing it the way they are, they can get South Africa on side because South Africa is not happy with the West. There's a period with Kofi Annan and others where South Africa was in favor of the responsibility to protect. It joined in over Sudan, for example. And that's it's pulled back since then. And so has Brazil. And a lot of this is down to the arrogance and clumsiness of American and Western diplomacy. I mean, most of the time, all the Russians wanted was a little respect. And they were treated as defeated victims at the end of Perestroika when Gorbachev went. And that's they were very, very cooperative. They weren't beyond the call of duty. And so in addition to all of those sordid economic details you mentioned, which have a part, there is also this persistent feeling of humiliation that, you know, they were a great power and they were treated like that. And they look at themselves, they say, excuse me, you have 9 people in support of this resolution and you say this means that we should go with the flow. A few weeks ago on Palestine, we had 14 members of the Security Council and the Americans vetoed it. So how can we have to go with the flow when there's a bare majority and you don't have to when we have an overwhelming majority? And, you know, that's the type of stuff that plays out to the Third World Gallery because they're looking and saying, yes, you want to deal with Syria. So if Syria, then why not Bahrain? No, in fact,
right. You know, or Palestine, yeah. So again,
Palestine, especially right. Palestine. I mean, yeah. that American diplomacy, as long as Israel gets a free pass, is never going to have much in the way of credence in most of the rest of the world. And
but Ian Williams,
Morocco is the Arab member who's just sort of representing the Arab League, pushing for action. Morocco is still occupying Western Sahara 40 years after resolution has told it to get the hell out of there. So you know, the question once again is. You know, hypocrisy is not a sound basis upon which to build, an ethical foreign policy.
Yes, but Ian Williams, again, veteran UN correspondent, the Arab League, of course, have preceded this UN resolution and failed. They sent in an observer mission. That was pretty unanimous, including Morocco. The Saudis and the Qataris have been pushing it. Iraqis have opposed it, but then they went along with it to try and compromise. They're clearly taking their instructions, or at least influenced by Iran, Algeria voted against it, but it was pretty unanimous. So we know that the Arab League's involved. And in fact, the guy that everybody thought was a total disaster, the head of the Arab League delegation, who himself apparently perhaps involved in war crimes in Darfur, he has gone public, and a report of his has been leaked to Foreign Policy in Focus, where he says that, you know, the Arab League monitors were a total joke. They were not qualified. Some of them thought they were going to Syria for pleasure. That's been a complete catastrophe, which has led to this situation now in the United Nations, right?
Yes, and you know, the Arab League has never been an impressive body. A former ambassador from the Arab League to the UN once explained to me why he had such flowery, wonderful rhetoric. It was because it was disguised as a lack of substance. He says, I can't speak on behalf of the Arab League because whatever I say is going to be contradicted by half of them at any given moment. And, it's the fact that with the changes, it's actually coming out sort of almost shooting from the hip. Still, remember, one of the most powerful members of the Arab League is Saudi Arabia, where, you know, executions, repression, and complete denial of human rights, let alone women's rights, are accepted by us because they're our allies. And, it highlights the hypocrisy of all of this.
Well, our next guest is coming up after you, Ian Williams, is going to be talking about the subtext of why the Saudis and the Qataris are arming and training the Free Syrian Army, that they want to shape the Arab Spring to maintain their feudal regimes. Just in terms of...
Well, there's partly that, but also the geopolitics, remember, Assad has... although he's been getting supported by these Saudis financially and politically in relation to Israel, has been completely in bed with the Iranians for a long time in a geopolitical terms, which, of course, the Saudis, there's a whole circle of people with knives in their back, at each other's backs here. So the Saudis are unhappy with the Iranian connection and would obviously like a more pliable Sunni regime that they can deal with there. And they're even prepared for it to be democratic as long as they doesn't infect Saudi Arabia itself.
Well, Salafists, though. But I'm saying they're already Salafists fighting the Syrian regime inside of Homs and Hama, which would made into, you know, and you know that the Saudis have been supporting not with arms but with money, the Salafists in Egypt who did very well in the elections. So.
This has been one of the real problems with Syria is it does have quite substantial minorities between the Alawites and the Christians and the Kurds and others. And if this continues, then the last thing anybody wants to see is the sort of pogroms that happened in Iraq, where minorities were driven and those population shifts and. Once again, Assad will have some popular support because these types of minorities in Iraq, they tended to supported Saddam Hussein because he protected them against the majority in many ways. And a similar situation applies possibly in Syria with Assad. You know, he has looked after the Christians and the others there. So he's... there will be some support, no matter how passive for him. But the real problem is, as long as it carries on in this disorganized way, in the good old days, either the Russians or the Americans would have arranged a coup, and the Syrian military would have just moved in and shifted him. That's how it used to be done. But one of the things that happened is that the Al-Assads have packed all the higher echelons of the armed force and security forces with the family and members of the Alawite sect, which
Well, just in closing, then
made them a target,
right? Well, just in closing, Ian Williams, again, veteran UN correspondent, Hillary Clinton, of course, is saying it's absolutely imperative that we be on the right side of history and that the Syrian people themselves are the ones who are crying out for peace and justice, for dignity, for their rights and a better future. And whose side are you on? The side of a brutal dictatorial regime or the people? That's the way she's put it to the Russians. Now, I take it that this is going nowhere. No decision today. Just in the last minute, what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, there's a few to exit. I mean, the signals that are coming are mixed. This is a sort of game of bluff. It's quite possible that there might be, you know, there could even be a side deal involving Iran, that the Russians would support a stronger resolution on Syria if the West backed off on Iran and restrained Israel. I mean, all of these things are possible in this type of poker game that they're playing. And another possibility would be, if they wanted to send a signal, would be to pass a resolution referring this whole affair to the International Criminal Court, which would be a good way out. And it's happened before. It happened in Libya, and it happened. But then you have the complication that you're sort of not giving much of an incentive to Al-Assad to get the hell out if he thinks he's going to go straight to The Hague. You need a soft landing. I foresee a possible future for him in a retirement home in Riyadh, like every other Arab dictator.
Well, Ian Williams, I thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Ian Williams, who's a veteran journalist and UN correspondent and author. He's a senior analyst at Foreign Policy in Focus and writes for Salon and Alternet and is the author of a number of books, including The UN for Beginners, The Arms Trade, that's ALMS, Deserted, George W. Bush's War on Military Families, Veterans and His Past, and Rum, A Social and Sociable History. His blog is Deadline Pundit. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back getting an analysis of the forces arrayed inside and outside of Syria.